Hi, I'm Veronica Dagger, and this is the Wall Street Journal's Secrets of Wealthy Women, where women share how they tackle career, money, and the world. Today, we're speaking with Lydia Bastianich. She's an Italian-American chef, best-selling cookbook author, and restaurant owner with a global empire. She and her former husband opened their first restaurant in Queens, New York, with just 9 tables. Today, she owns 3 restaurants in 2 cities, is a co-owner of the Italian food hall chain Eataly, and has her own line of pasta and sauce. She's kept cool in the heat of the kitchen to come out on top in a male-dominated food industry, which is under even more scrutiny today. We want to talk to her about how it was and how it's changed. Lydia, welcome to Secrets.
Buongiorno, Veronica.
Great. So we want to go back to that beginning of your cooking career. It was a small 9-table restaurant in Queens. Can you describe it for us?
It was in Forest Hills, Queens. It was 1971. And I was young, you know, just I had my first child and with my husband. And he was in the industry. He was in the front of the house. And I had worked in the industry, but I wasn't a full-fledged chef yet. And so he said he always wanted to open this restaurant. And I said, I'll be there with you. Let's do it. And we found this little place on Queens Boulevard, 9 tables, you know, in the suburbs. So not the investment wasn't too risky. Mm. It was a small place. We hired a chef. I went in the kitchen with him as a sous chef and wanted to make sure that, you know, the food that we loved, we would serve that kind of food. And so it started. It was a rainy, Thursday day. And in April, when we did open, the rain was pouring and there was a line outdoor.
Wow.
Thank God we had one of those awnings. And so it started and continued. It was a success from that moment on. We had a great time. And I really honed sort of my skills as I went on.
Well, how did you discover your love for the kitchen?
Well, Veronica, my story is I am an immigrant. I came here, I was 12 years old. And I was born in Istria. Istria is no longer Italy, but it was Italy. Istria is now Croatia. But after World War II, Italy lost the war, and Istria and part of Dalmatia, which is in the northeastern corner of Italy, that part was given to the newly formed communist Yugoslavia. Italy lost the war. The Paris Treaty sort of decided the borders. And I was just born around that time. And we were caught as a family, as an Italian family, behind the Iron Curtain, now into a Yugoslavian culture. And it was a difficult time. Food-wise, we couldn't speak our language. We couldn't go to church. So, you know, I relate to today's needs of people that are trying to look for a place to live, to form a family, a life. But we lived like that for about 10 years. And during those 10 years, food was scarce. My mother was a teacher, my father a mechanic, and they stayed in the city. But they put us, my brother and I, with Grandma in a little town. And that's where the magic happened. Grandma had a courtyard. We had chickens. We had ducks. We had rabbits. We had 2 goats. I remember every morning milking the goats. That was breakfast. We had two pigs Grandma had every November. The slaughter, the making of the prosciutto, the sausages, the garden. I would help her with the garden, collect the vegetables, clean the vegetables, collect the figs, dry the figs in the summer, the beans. Shell the beans for the winter. And so I was the little runner for Grandma, helped her make the bread, make the you know, whatever. And my passion for food, the understanding maybe, you know, those aromas, those pristine flavors really stayed with me. I was recording those. And in 1956, 10 years after, my parents decided that something must be done. My parents applied for a political asylum. We were put in a political refugee camp, San Saba, for 2 years. That camp now is a museum. And then ultimately in 1958, we were given an opportunity to come to America. Dwight Eisenhower was the president. I recall that very vividly. But, Veronica, I think my passion for food was my connector to that special place, to Graham. And I began cooking. All the aromas that I remember, the flavors that I recalled, they all brought Grandma back to me. And I've been cooking ever since and communicating with food ever since.
You're on tour promoting your latest book, and that cookbook is based on your first Manhattan restaurant, Felidia. And that restaurant made you a major success around the world and put a bigger spotlight on your career.
Felidia did give me really that platform. And 1981 was 10 years after the first restaurant. By then we had two. We sold them. We leveraged that to open Felidia and almost didn't open because of our budgets. But we did ultimately, and I became the chef there. So here I was, a young woman chef, Italian, and cooking regional Italian food. You know, Italy has 20 regions. And the food that is known in America is the Italian-American food, which is the Italian rendition of the immigrants' food when they came here. They cooked what they remembered, what they found, the ingredients that they found. And it was a different cuisine, delicious cuisine, but it is a different cuisine. So here I was. I said, I'm going to cook the regional food of Italy. And I began polenta and risotto and gnocchi and whatever. And, of course, the newspapers, they became curious. The journalists became curious, who is this woman? And ultimately, I think that the big coup, if you will, was when Julia Child and James Beard came over for dinner. And she loved the risotto. She wanted to learn how to make it. I remember it was mushroom risotto. She asked me ultimately to be on her show. We did two episodes. And that generated the interest of the producer. Lydia, you're pretty good. How about a show of your own? And it's 20 years ago that, you know, I started my Lydia's Kitchen on PBS, and I still have the show. So that's a great platform for me to share with the potential customers, viewers out there, my life, Italian food, give them some knowledge on how they can do that, and ultimately come and follow me, my restaurants, books, and so on.
So just going back to your days starting out in the restaurant in Queens, you were the sous chef and then trained under that head chef. What was that training like?
I remember I was very young, very excited, and very enthusiastic about, Veronica, our industry is tough on women. It really is. But I was blessed maybe because it was a family business, but also I was young. And I was very enthusiastic about. I loved what I did. And I don't know if I've ever considered myself, I am a woman doing this. You know, I am a chef. I am a cook. And my focus was on my profession. And I tell, when I speak to women's group or whatever, I tell them all, I said, focus on the profession, not you as a woman in the profession. Get that down, educate yourself, invest in yourself, be the best that you can be, and then go out there as a professional and make it happen.
How do you feel like the industry is tough on women?
The hours, there's long hours, there's late hours. So running a household with children and the restaurant is tough. But then, you know, the restaurant industry was basically men. And they still feel they own it. And, it's now sort of, it's kind of leveling out the field, and which is great. But if you went into a kitchen and, the chef was God with his big hat and whatever, and whoever was under him, you came in as a subordinate on all levels, specifically if you were a woman.
Did you ever experience any of that macho, controlling kitchen culture?
Not as much in my restaurants, but I did a lot of out events and went to big hotels and with big chefs, all these food events. And there, undoubtedly, especially if they didn't know, not that I was all that famous then in a sense, but, they really challenged me in every single way. Prove yourself. Ultimately, when I cooked and they ate my food, they got it. And that was my defense. I was a professional. I produced good food, and that earned me a sort of respect throughout.
So we have to talk about Mario Batali. He's a celebrity chef who was your longtime business partner until allegations of sexual harassment forced him from the industry. What was your reaction when you heard?
I was so surprised. I was not aware of the depth of his misgiving or mistreating or whatever. In the restaurant that we co-owned, there was one incident that a woman co-worker complained, and we addressed it immediately. He had to go for training, and that was that. I think a lot of what he did happened outside. On his time off or whatever. And, you know, I didn't socialize with him much, so I didn't know, and they wouldn't tell me. Within our units, because, you know, we didn't work that close. We had kind of divisions of labor. But the only complaint I got is once, and we addressed it.
So you cut ties with Batali, and now the New York Attorney General is also investigating your restaurant group and your son for the way it handled harassment complaints. Have you made any changes in company culture and accountability in the wake of all this?
Oh, absolutely. Right away, we negotiated to get Mario out of our business. So we are the sole owners, the family. It's my daughter and my son now that run the. We implemented, you know, the training as far as the work place, but also as far as labor of training of management. We have a line, an independent line that if they have any complaint in a restaurant, they can call and file the complaints in a sense so that we can investigate and take correction. Absolutely. I think it's behind us because, you know, that's what I'm all about, you know, and I've been. When all of this came out, I says, my God, we have to straighten this out and, you know, what is our philosophy? Continue with our philosophy. Get rid of all the specifically Mario and move on. And of course, you know, I think he still has he might have some skeletons in the I don't know, but that's his business now.
Is it difficult for you personally to have your name associated with this sort of thing? Because that's not what you stand for.
Absolutely, it is. It was very difficult. I was depressed. I really was. I said, Lydia, that's not you. How could you have not maybe seen her? You know, it wasn't happening in front of me. But you know what? There is the reality of who I am and my strength as a woman and my beliefs in women and working with women and the trust that I have in women. That's strong in me. And I have to make that for the better of the industry in the future.
How has all the changes with Batali and all the changes you've had to make in your business affected your business's bottom line?
I think initially the customers really are were very responsive. And, you know, they did not want any part of where they thought that what they ate and paid for would go to Batali. So, you know, eliminating him out of this and making the diner understand how we went after this, you know, and our partners on the West Coast is Nancy Silverton. So we have women, my daughter. So, you know, we made really the women's strength very present in our organization because we are there and reinforce that. And so, but it did. People are very conscious, responsive. And now the whole thing has turned around.
Was it a wake-up call, do you think, in terms of the industry?
I think so. Something had to happen. You know, women were competent and good and passionate like any other worker. You know, we needed more space. Actually, about not only as space as far as chefs and professionals, but also and opportunities from the financial world. The restaurant industry is a very risky industry anyway. Mm. And especially women wanted to grow in the restaurant industry. And ultimately, you know, you are, when you are an owner, when you own your own business, then you're really on top of things. You can do things. And for women to get financing from money to open restaurants from the financial world was very difficult. About 15 years ago, there was about six of us. We grouped together. We formed Women Chefs and Restaurateurs. It's an organization still existing. I think it's over 2,000 strong. And at that time, my focus was, you know, this focus of the six of us was not so much to have, oh, we're going to cry on each other's shoulder, but to address this issue of finance and give women an opportunity to meet bankers, to meet the American Express people, to give them an opportunity to possibly move on and have their own restaurant. And, you know, have their own platform, if we will.
Coming up, Lydia explains how she runs her family business and what's next for her food empire.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
So what started out as one small restaurant has today grown into an international empire. How did you know what steps to take to grow your business?
I think you have to be very much in tune. In tune, you know, you have to follow. Food evolves, but the actual culture of food has a slow evolvement through the ages. But it has become precipitous in a sense of you know, certainly the internet, the marketing, the everything being able to be had all over the world, the mixture of cultures. So there's, you know, the millennials, the attitude of young people, you know, they are very much into food. They love good food, they love healthy food, they're conscious about the environment, and food is all part of this. They are conscious about the business of food. But also, I think that one thing is maybe they're a little less needy of service, which was kind of part of the restaurant business a decade ago or so, that people wanted to be pampered. The new customer, if you will, does not have the time to spend but demands good, healthy foods, and they know it.
You have a lot of different ventures, and you're working with your kids now, too. How has that changed how you run your business?
I have kind of a mentor feeling now with the chefs, with my children, so I encourage them. But I think for a family business, which is not an easy business. It's not easy to put together a family and collaborate in a successful business. You need to give the next generation an opportunity to be creative, to grow, to bring their ideas. And I would say that my growth in the last 10 years has precisely been the fact of my son coming in and then my daughter and giving them that opportunity.
How did you know to step back a bit, it sounds like, and give up some of that control so they could learn and they can grow the business? Because a lot of founders, and you're essentially the founder, have difficulty doing that.
Yes. It's not easy. In the beginning, there was a little friction, but, you know, I looked at the situation, and with the consultation of, you know, a lot of my financial advisors, if you will, you know, the bankers, the accountants, and all of that, it became evident that, you know, they were intelligent. They were passionate. They had ideas. So as their ideas grew, I kind of sort of just endorsed them or corrected them or added to these ideas. And what I love doing is, you know, I love the message that I can give out, whether it's through books, whether it's through my television, and through the mentoring. So slowly, this is what I do more of, and I love it. But I'm always part of their growth because that's what it is. But it's a great satisfaction, you know, because I guess because I'm a mother, to see your own offsprings kind of thrive and grow and be successful in what you are. And you know, sometimes what happens is that when at the beginning this is, oh, I would never do that. You know, Mom, you're wrong and whatever. Now I see them doing some of the same things.
So what's the greatest financial lesson you learned about entrepreneurship over the years?
Oh, my goodness. Almost not making it. That coming close to that edge and, you know, just almost desperation. That was when we opened Philadelphia. And we didn't, you know, our budget was very tight. We sold the two restaurants that we had. All of the savings that the family had, that my mother had, everything went in it. And what we didn't predict was that the house, the brownstone that Philadelphia is in, needed underpinning all around. So, you know, and that was a big chunk of money, $250,000 at that time, and the time that it took. So that really took us for a loop. We worked nights. I cooked for the workers so that they would work there. I had a little stove and cook for them so that they would work overtime so that they were, you know, that we would get it finished.
What advice do you have for young women who want to run the kitchen and have a business like yours?
I think, you know, just encourage the women out there in our industry. Just go for it. There are opportunities. But the one thing is just invest in yourself. Be the best that you can be, you know, whether the school, whether apprenticeship, you know, take the time. And when you feel that you're ready, take that leap. Go for it and make it happen. And in our industry, I would say, you know, look at yourself as a professional. Don't look at the gender. I think, you know, more women need to come to the top. More women need to hold the key positions, whether it's chef, whether it's managers, whether it's owners. And the opportunities need to be there for the women financially. And investors, you know, should consider ever more women because, you know, I think that women are great in this industry. It's almost, you know, we are nurturers. We are, in a sense, yes, it's difficult, the hours and all that. But some of the top chefs coming up now are women because they have this chance. They have this open, if you will.
Would you say that standard is higher for women in the industry?
Yeah, somehow women are expected to produce, to do more, to prove themselves maybe more. But, you know, I think give credit to all these young chefs and everybody, all these women coming back. They are really facing it with strength, which is great.
That's great. Thank you so much, Lydia.
My pleasure.
If you'd like to hear more of Secrets of Wealthy Women, you can find us on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your favorite audio provider. If you like us, subscribe, share us on social media, and give us a review. I'm Veronica Dagger. Thank you for listening.